fills with dread. Probably a murderer who wants you dead. It could be a ghost, a demon, or worse. Perhaps you're the victim of a witch's curse. It's hopeless, you're doomed, you'd call a priest if you could. You'd rather just listen to who? Sinister Who.
Welcome to another edition of Freaky Friday, where we tell your odd but true stories. It is currently Friday, April 3rd, and we are here to bring you six jaw-dropping, in many cases, I mean, in every case, jaw-dropping stories. It's what a lineup we've got today.
Oh, yeah. Sorry there's no bubbles in this one. So, you know, sometimes you don't have bubbles.
Sometimes you don't have bubbles. The bubbles was our live Q&A last night. Thank you, everybody that came and hung out with us. It was so good to just catch up with everybody, talk about stuff in the news, stuff that's been going on, our lives and everything. So go over to Patreon. Mm-hmm. You can watch the replay on demand on Crowdcast. And, you know, check out the next one. We've got another one April 23rd at 8:30 p.m. Central. So, well, that'll be bubbly, I'm sure, enough for all of us. It's the week of 420. It has to be. We'll make sure it's bubbly.
Surely everything will be solved by then.
You know, anytime somebody will be like, yeah, no, it's like, well, that'll be happening in the future. I'm like, things will be better by then. They have to be. Surely they will be by then. Will they?
Cut to 2019.
Yeah, exactly. That was one of our Q&A questions is, what would 2019 say to you today? And I was like, they'd probably be like, I am headed back. I'm going to go. I'm sorry. I'm going back. And you'd be like,
buckle
I know. Yeah. Like, I can't blame you. Go back to just go back to 2019. It's fine.
Go back. Well, some of these stories definitely took place before 2019. So things were still, you know, shitty before
there's
then
been
too.
That's what I was thinking about our cruise, and I was like, my parents went on a cruise in June of 1979, and I looked up the headlines. Wow. And it was like, gas prices out of control, and I was like, hang on a minute, this
20
familiar.
Cents a gallon.
Yeah, right. They were like freaking out. They were like, it's 70. I remember the day it went over 99 cents, and my dad's like, it'll never go back down again. And my mom's like, that's how inflation works. But he was also right.
And they were right. And now in some places it's $8. Mm-hmm. Which is crazy.
But I was like, man, the 70s, that was a wild time of news. But I said, it seems worse now because it's happening to us. And it is happening now. So it definitely, to the immediacy, cranks it up a notch. But
it does.
But I do look forward to going back on and cruise with all of you guys, much like my parents were cruising through the 70s. Let's cruise through the 2020s.
Let's cruise into 2027.
Hell yeah.
The Atlantic Ocean on Oasis of the Seas, February 8th through 12th. How about that?
Yes, take me away, crimewaveatsea.com. Use code SINISTER to join us. Like I said, I've been pulling out my old memories and just thinking about the cruise times we have, and I can feel the pictures. Me and you sitting on the deck, and we've got our drinks, and I was like, oh, I feel the breeze. I feel your shoulder next to mine and our drinks in our hand.
Yes.
So we will go back. Go to crimewaveatsea.com/sinister and join us on Crime Wave at Sea next February. And there's always something to look forward to. We're looking forward to you.
On our one of our devices that flips through digital photos in our house, the one where I was like, babe, come over here on the balcony to get a picture with me. And he's taking a selfie from the other part of the balcony, but only to get me in the shot being like, get over here. I'm like, this is like that TikTok trend years ago when it was like, the pictures I take of my husband versus the pictures he takes of me.
There are pictures I have of Paris.
They're never flattering.
Where I'm like, this looks like a portrait that someone could frame in a gallery. Because you, like, I'm like, the light struck your face. And there will be pictures of me that I'm like, and he goes, look how cute you are. You are so mad at something in this picture. I'm like, I'll kill you.
Yeah, it's probably because I wasn't ready. It wasn't camera time.
You got me, baby. You got me. Well, we're ready for all these stories you've curated. Thank you. Man. Thanks, everybody that took time to send them in. And to everyone that endured all of these things.
Yeah, for good real. Lord. Well, I'm Christy.
I'm Heather.
And let's get freaky. This first one is from Matilda. It's called Jim's Girls. Content warning, this discusses CSA. Hi, ladies. This story is heavy, and I don't feel like any preamble is really appropriate, but I will include here a trigger warning for child sexual assault. Let's get into it. With all of the Epstein files and exposures in the news, it's hard to not think about how many fucking abusers there are in this world. It brought back my family's proximity to such an abuser, and I wanted to share the story. When my sisters and I were kids, both of our parents worked full-time, so we spent our summers in day camp at the YMCA. I started at 5 years old in 1992. I don't recall if my older sisters had been going to camp before I was old enough, or if we had started at the same time, but we were always at camp together in my memory. At the time, the director there was a man by the name of James, or Jim, Connor. My memories about this man are vague, but I do remember him. I also remember that after the summer of 1995, he was fired, and the rumor mill was that he had supplied alcohol to underage counselors at the end of the year party. More on this in a minute. Fast forward to 2009, and my middle sister sent me an article about Jim. He had been arrested for raping a child under 14. As is often the case, that was the tip of the iceberg. In the end, he pleaded guilty to 20 charges, which included 5 counts of rape of a child and 4 counts of indecent assault on a child, with 2 victims cited, both assaulted numerous times while Jim was employed as their basketball coach for a different YMCA, including using hidden cameras to record the assaults. Just absolutely disgusting. And as awful as that is, I would bet money that that wasn't even nearly the totality of his crimes. I've attached an article that details his firing from 2 separate YMCAs before being hired at a third, where he was employed when the assaults took place. He was fired from the Y in my hometown in 1995 for allegedly drinking and smoking pot on a party bus with 15 and 16-year-old counselors. He was then fired from a second YMCA in 2001 after staff reported his, quote, unusually close contact with children. It was also reported that at a camp sleepover, he slept next to a young girl and often had a, quote, favorite who he let sit on his lap on bus rides and had been observed with his arm around in the pool. This girl was under 10 years old. In addition to all that had been reported, which all happened well before he was charged with anything at the third YMCA that hired him, my sisters recall our time at camp in the early 90s when Jim would have his favorite campers, always girls, eat lunch with him in his office. My middle sister recalls being completely naive and extremely jealous of the attention that Jim's girls received. Of course, in hindsight, I am very glad none of us were Jim's girls. So it's anyone's guess how many children this man has abused or at the very least objectified during his decades working at YMCA camps. But he was convicted of harming 2 and sentenced to 20 to 30 years in prison. As far as I'm aware, no other victims have come forward, but there is no doubt in my mind that there are more. In addition to the article I sent, this link is for an article with far more detail about the assaults. Read at your own risk. Thanks for all you do, Matilda.
Matilda, I clicked the link before I saw you wrote read at your own risk, and you were right. It is graphic, and it is extremely heart-wrenching what this person did.
And at three YMCAs?
3 different places. And someone said the defendant was beloved by everyone and had everyone fooled. And the victim's parents said that he really brainwashed the kids and told them all, like, no one's going to believe you. No one's going to believe you. And that's why we don't exalt a man. Never exalt one. If you exalt a man, they feel that they're above things and they can never be. And that's why you tell every child, girl, boy, whatever, you tell them all, no man is above the law. No man's above anything. I will topple the regime for you so that a kid knows that you're a safe one to come to. And that every kid in my life, I'm always like, I'm extremely powerful. I tell my nieces, I'm a very powerful witch. I'm a lawyer and I have a microphone and I will always believe you. So whatever power you have in your sphere of influence of children, let them, you know, luckily your kids, Christy, have a parent that both 2 parents that they know will fight for them and will do anything for them. So not all kids have that. So if the kids at the YMCA, you know, camp or whatever, and you're, even if you're the volunteer being like, why he have everybody sitting on his lap? Mm-hmm. I got some questions about that.
What pool party are we at where he has his arm around a 10-year-old? Because that's not appropriate by any means.
And this is why we all, you know, when it's an old man being like, you're so pretty. Do you have a boyfriend? Do you want me to be your boyfriend? Nowadays, we go, what the fuck is wrong with you, Paps? What are you saying that for? Back in the day, we go, oh, that's so nice of you. She's so pretty. Thank you so please. And we were so nice to him. And now it's like, what kind of pervert shit is that? Why would you say that to my little girl? You're not, she's not your girlfriend. Nip it in the bud. Nip it.
I was thinking the other day about a time when I was at the hair salon. I was probably 15, 14, maybe even 13. My mom was with me. And the dude doing my hair, who was probably like in his 20s, late 20s, early 30s, was like, God, you look so good. Can you come over here so we can take a picture? And my mom was like, she's 15.
Thank you.
And at the time, I was embarrassed. I mean, it was more for, you know, the hair, not me.
Sure.
Or was it? Right. But at the time, I remember being embarrassed because I was like, this older guy who's good looking is like hitting on me kind of. And now I'm like, I would have taken the closest pair of scissors and done some damage.
Yeah. When I said nip it in the bud, you don't know what I meant by it. You might need to nip it. And if there's scissors nearby, nip it. No, you're right, though, because I think we feel, you know, in the like as a 15-year-old, even as like a 12-year-old, I was like, Howie from the Backstreet Boys is going to be my boyfriend. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. And I, you know, nobody did anything wrong. And that's just like the nature of heartthrobs and stuff like that. But to the point of like, you as a 15-year-old, like, no, I want that older male attention. Mm-hmm. And it's like, but why? And I think patriarchally, we've been groomed just societally, like you want older men to have their eyes on you. But now that we've all, you know, in the Epstein of it all, we're kind of like, oh no, like that's in an inappropriate amount of attention on a
kid. Sure.
It's one thing to be like, could you turn around? I'm going to take a photo of just how the cut looked before and after. But if it's like, you're beautiful, you're shaped beautifully, I just want a photo of you. And you're just like, I'm a kid. Like, I can't drive yet. So
I've memories have been like coming back probably because of all this Epstein stuff where I'm like, my God, the 80s and 90s, people were real loose with comments towards kids. And I'm just like thinking of all these like just casual encounters I had, like walking through a store or something where like an older man said something that now I would be like, what the hell did you just say to my kid?
Yeah.
And even like as a teenager, like, no, no, no. And my parents, you know, weren't with me in these at these times, but still like that feeling of entitlement that like, I don't even really care how old you are because I'm not even asking. Clearly you're a child though. And I'm an old man. And I think it's like sweet and nice for me to be like, oh my God, you're going to break those boys' hearts when you're older. It's like, why are you looking at me and imagining how I would look older and that I would be good looking and break people's hearts? That's so weird to say.
Yeah, you're going to have so many boyfriends when you grow up with God. Your dad's going to have to beat the guys away with the stick. I will beat you right now with the stick. Or like, you know, just
keep a stick next to my bedside just in case anybody comes in.
I have my sock bat. But yeah,
I don't, like, but now I'm thinking that might be a good idea.
Might need to put a sock on it. But yeah, I think the key word, the ding, ding, ding is entitlement. Because I think we did come from a generation that was those in charge had this authoritarian, you will listen to me, you can't question me.
Yeah.
Because I said so. And now we're, I hope, moving towards a no, fuck that. Yeah. You have to earn your respect. I don't care how long you've been around. If you have shitty behavior, we will hold you to account regardless of how long you've been at it. And I think you see that now with some of the Epstein stuff coming out. People go, well, you know, what if it showed you like whatever, Bill Clinton, we know he's a pervert. We know, like, what if it showed you Bob Ross turned out to be a pervert? Be like, we don't fucking care. Kill them all. Like, to be clear, I don't know that Bob Ross was in the Epstein files. Was all those paintings where he hid bodies? That is a theory that's on the internet. But I think that there's
Bob Ross hid bodies. Oh yeah.
That he had painted. That was like, oh, all these little things. But I think there was this kind of idea though before that was the authority is in charge because I said so. We'll whoop you if you say no. And so we were all sort of afraid of it now. Mm-hmm. And I think hopefully, I mean, a little bit with Gen X and more so with millennials, we're all just like, no. And really now Gen Z's like, make me. So I like that. And having this idea of like, well, an older man, you know, said you might need a training bra soon and you can't cut someone out in a Kohl's. It's like I can hold someone by their throat against the wall of a Kohl's.
I don't give a fuck how many Kohl's cash I lose over it. I will throttle somebody.
They're like, you have to pay.
Department.
You do have to pay the settlement out in Kohl's cash. But yeah, don't let anybody say shit like this.
No,
fuck
gym. It's crazy.
Fuck the gyms of the world. We'll beat their asses if they don't get their asses beaten, Joe.
No, And to your point of with each generation, there's less of a tolerance. When I was like Ella's age, the way I interacted with my parents' friends, completely different than the way her friends interact with us. And I mean, not for better or for worse, but I just remember being like, yes, ma'am, no, like you didn't question any adult, even if it wasn't your parent, if it was a teacher or your friend's parents or anything, these kids are wild, y'all. They'll just say whatever they want.
So I was like, and then, yeah, I said, Gen Alpha is just like, they don't even hear you because they built their own ski boat and they're just gone. And you're like, yeah. Well, oh, okay, whatever. That's how, I mean, your kids, my nieces, I'm like, you're all just geniuses. You're way smarter than all of us.
Yeah.
And defiant, the female, the girls especially. And I like it. And I tell my nieces all the time, well, I hear them, they get told to do something and not like their parents go and brush your teeth, but you know, some boy, like you have to get off of that. They're like, why? Make me. And you're just you can't make her. She knows judo. Like, she knows taekwondo.
Tommy was camping with Simon this past weekend, and it took them being gone for maybe an hour before Ella, I said, because we were listening to Lana Del Rey, and it was like, will you still love me when I'm no longer young and beautiful? And she was like, what if it just said old and ugly? And I was like, well, just because you're old doesn't mean you're ugly. I said, a lot of people, men, associate youth and beauty together, but that's not the truth. And she didn't question it. And I was like, and that's on when I'm left alone with people long enough. I will eventually, it always turns to PDF files or men doing something fucked up.
You're like, let me tell you some fuck shit about dudes. It's like, you probably experienced this, but I feel like it's something to learn. That's a good thing to learn early on too, of like, this standard is set in a way that doesn't reflect reality, that it's an external standard meant to sell things to you. And I, you know, I wish we all had access to that in the 90s and 2000s when I was like, I'll only eat 300 calories a day. So,
oh dude. Yeah. Yeah. When like, trigger warning, ED, like everyone in high school, myself included, had an eating disorder. Like, yeah, it was like you supported each other through it type of thing. You know, I mean, it was a different time. And we also didn't have the internet to like look up all this shit either. We had encyclopedias we could go to, or you just watched MTV and the news.
Or you read a magazine that's like, how to get a thigh gap, how to get divots in your hip bones and be thinner, like how to get a flat stomach. The amount of stuff I was like, I can do it. And you realize now, you're like, oh, they're trying to shrink me to make me look more like a kid.
Yes.
They want to fuck kids.
Like, I remember being like 7 or 8, and for Christmas, this product that had been marketed, and I got one, and I was like so excited I'd asked for it, was a workout kit called Get in Shape Girl. If anybody remembers this, let me know. But it was like 80s fun color, like, you know, sweat headbands and stuff, but all of in different, like a band you put on your foot and a tape that played music and stuff. But it was all designed for like someone that's 8 years old.
Yeah, it's less so like you should go play for fun and more like someday you'll have to exercise and maintain your body. I mean,
well,
I don't
there
know,
was no maybe. Get in shape boy. I'll say
that's
that.
That's a good way to put that. That's
it was only
it.
Get in shape girl. You know what I mean? So
and
even
it wasn't
from
like
that age, it was like you got to be thin, you got to look good, you got to have this type of body if you want guys to like you.
Yeah, it was not strength builder kit. Like for any kid, that's a different thing. Get in shape girl is a demand. It is a command to the purchaser.
It was.
Goddamn.
Well, flashback to that. Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Matilda, for sharing that story with us.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Well, well, well. I've had 3 different types of hero bread this week, and I'm not mad about it. I've had sandwiches. I've had bagel sandwiches. I've had just regular bagels with cream cheese. Oof. We've had pasta that the kids love, and all of it, I feel healthier eating because it's coming from Hero Bread. So I know it is healthier for me.
It's good stuff. With Hero Bread, you can focus on your health goals and still indulge in the soft, fluffy experience you love, like enjoying a nutritious breakfast wrap, avocado toast, grilled cheese with cozy soup, or family burger night. Their products are delicious and flavorful, but have ultra low net carbs, 0 grams of sugar, and are high in fiber. You gotta get that fiber, baby.
I'm always trying to get more fiber into my diet and into the kids' diets. So this is a very good way to do it, where you kind of trick everybody because
it's so good.
It tastes so good that nobody knows what they're that they're eating good stuff for them too.
You'd never know it's low net carb and high fiber bread from the texture. Get that soft, fluffy experience you know and love for your next savory bagel sandwich, mm-hmm. a standard sandwich. It's summertime, man. You get like a poolside sandwich with some hero bread. Get out of here, Taco
Tuesday.
Get yourself Tuesday.
A bologna sandwich.
Mm-mm, game changer.
Am I the only trash that loves
no.
bologna
no,
sandwiches?
No, bologna sandwich is like a poolside, like hot
I
day.
I feel that's mustard. It takes me back to my childhood mm-hmm, with like mm-hmm. Ruffles and bologna sandwiches with mustard. Damn,
barefooted,
dude.
Dripping swimsuit mm-hmm. and a bologna sandwich on hero bread, baby.
Sounds amazing. Get monthly small batch drops of indulgent favorites like their 4-gram net carb bagel and new surprises coming this year.
Hero Bread is offering 10% off your order. Go to hero.co and use code creepy at checkout. That's creepy at hero.co.
This next one is from A, and it's called It Could Be Happening to You or Your Child and You Wouldn't Even Fucking Know It. Content warning, this discusses SA and CSA. Christy and Heather, I love you guys and everything you do. From improv to calling it like it fucking is and a world full of ignorant bliss, listening to like and sound-minded women has helped me maintain sanity as a mom of a daughter and as a person living in a small town full of red-colored, red-pilled, honky yeehaws. I just turned 30 in February and my girl is 8. And after this story, I've been kind of spitballing about how dangerous life outside of our house is for the both of us, but also how it's just as dangerous for boys and men, too. An action like this doesn't discriminate. I'm going to remain anonymous this go-round because, well, I have a lot to say. This horrific, disgusting, absolutely abhorrent situation happened to my sister-in-law. I was not present. But it opened my eyes to so many things that us as humans and as parents probably never imagined, just like the state of our current administration and literally living through the proof that conspiracies can be proven as truth in some capacity. My sister-in-law went to the zoo with her sister, her brother-in-law, and their kids. So we'll go ahead and break down who is who with fake names. Amy, my sister-in-law. She has 2 boys, Josh and Matt. Amy's sister, Ashley, has a husband named Mike and a daughter named Ellie. I will absolutely say where this zoo is because it's so important to be shared, and I'm actually disgusted with how the zoo and their security initially handled this incident. So, St. Louis Zoo, free parking is cool, but predators not in fucking cages and only being escorted out without a call to police is not fucking cool. So everyone was at the zoo with their little kiddos on a rare, beautiful day. Blah, blah, blah. I don't even have the decency to make this sound great. After finishing up lunch in the pavilion thing where there's a cafeteria, Amy needed to change Matt's diaper. So Ashley and Mike took Josh with them and Ellie to grab some ice cream. Amy went to the women's restroom and had just got to the changing table when she noticed a man walking behind her and stand directly next to her at the trash can. At first, she thought maybe he was a janitor, but why the hell was he coming in there while it was obviously occupied? So she waited a moment and noticed he was taking something out of the trash can. It still wasn't processing. She finally realized, once he moved his hand to his face, that he was removing dirty diapers from the trash can and smelling them. She froze. He grabbed another and repeated. When Amy noticed a woman behind her waiting for the changing table, she whispered to her, "He's fucking sniffing dirty diapers." The woman standing behind Amy said to the man, "You better put those fucking diapers down right now." The man did not do that. No, he instead pulled down his pants and underwear and proceeded to jerk all the way off with a goddamned fucking dirty diaper. Amy grabbed Matt and ran out of the bathroom having a full panic attack, screaming for security and rightfully terrified. Ashley, Mike, Josh, and Ellie were at least a 6-minute walk from that women's restroom. When security came, Amy told them what had happened, and she mentioned to me that they seemed to not believe her at first. Security then took a statement from her and the man and just escorted him out of the zoo. No call to police, no holding this man until police arrived, and no one explaining that she absolutely can press charges because her and her 1-year-old son were just sexually assaulted. They didn't get the name of the other woman in the restroom or anything either. Amy FaceTimed me the day after all this happened to explain the situation. When I told her that what her and Matt experienced was sexual assault, she responded with, "I didn't know that." But as a mother, she said she couldn't stop thinking about all of the moms and babies that have no idea what this man was doing. Because where else has he done it? How often does he go into bathrooms looking for dirty diapers? And I can't stop thinking about the fact that his potential for escalating behavior is inevitable. Dirty diapers will turn into babies, will turn into mothers, will turn into the worst possible outcome. And the zoo didn't call the police, a place where families literally go all of the time because that's what it's for. As a mom who would have absolutely ended up with my own charges that day, whether you freeze or you fly or you fight, if you go through something like this, don't let it go. Don't let the negligence of the people around you keep you from advocating for yourself and ensuring that sick fucking people pay the consequences of their actions. I told Amy that she should consider therapy because I could see how badly this scared her. To be afraid to change your child in a public restroom, to be afraid to have your back turned, to be afraid to have a day in the sun with your children. That is not how women and mothers and children should feel when they leave their homes. Amy did contact police, and her husband contacted the zoo and lost his mind. From my understanding, they're getting security footage and doing what they can to make sure charges are pressed and that this man is held accountable for his actions and added to a list, and I hope thrown into a hole with whatever animal wouldn't care to eat him alive. We shouldn't have to experience these things and share them as cautionary tales, and shame on the St. Louis Zoo for how they handled this situation. And I'll say now, they're incredibly lucky it wasn't me that it happened to, because I love being on camera and I love the idea of headline news and ruining the life of someone who doesn't deserve to have one. I don't care how heartless that sounds. Actions that are this sick by a human being don't deserve compassion or understanding or a turn cheek, period. So stick that in your juice box and suck it. Thank you so much for reading. You both have given me the courage to speak my mind unfiltered and be confident in the woman that I am. You're both also fucking hilarious, and I've never laughed with real life people the way I do listening to y'all. And thank you both so much for giving us all a safe space to share our experiences. Whether it's something traumatic we've lived through, aliens, Bigfoot, R2-D2, ghosts, or a sleep paralysis demon. Is anyone else's Fred Durst? I'm not mad about it. No one gets us like you do, aunties. Keep it creepy and legal.
Well, speaking of legal,
dude,
first of all, we were both, I said I would have stomped him, but
I said I would have gone to jail that day, no doubt.
But she had a kid with her. I mean, you grab your baby and just run.
Oh yeah, for sure.
I do think that probably the best solution would be if the zoo were to put him in the cage with like a lion or a tiger.
Yeah, yeah. That's just one that hasn't eaten in a while. It's feeding time.
Yeah, starve it. But no, for real, this is absolutely sexual misconduct in the first degree. That is knowingly exposing genitals to another person under circumstances where a reasonable person would be alarmed or offended. Like, I don't know, a fucking women's restroom. Not to mention he masturbated in front of a one-year-old child, which is a strong argument for sexual misconduct involving a child under 15. It is jaw-dropping that the St. Louis Zoo did not immediately call the police, because that's the so the criminal side is sexual misconduct, the first degree sexual misconduct involving a child under 15. The civil liability, which it sounds like they're freaking out a little bit and they're like, we'll get you the documentation, whatever you need. Because I would still tell your sister-in-law, and most of the time they'll do a free consult, reach out to a personal injury or civil rights attorney, because you could do a Missouri Sunshine Law, which is, you know, like an open records request to see if the zoo had any other reports of this individual, any complaints. If they've just been quietly ejecting him each time and never reported him to law enforcement, that is absolutely premises negligence. And negligent security, I think under Missouri law, is like the highest duty of care, is that you have a duty of care to exercise reasonable care to your invitees. You're inviting people to the zoo.
They're paying
money to come in. You're saying, please bring your small children here. Mm-hmm. When you do that, you have a duty to ensure that it is safe and secure. And so your decision to merely escort him out rather than saying, we're going to detain you because this is a major sex crime. We're going to detain you. A major sex crime against a child happened at their zoo and their response.
Two, given a woman was waiting also for the changing table. And I mean, it seems like at least two children were in there.
Yeah. And that lady was in there, you know, at least two women, two kids, whatever. It's like he's got multiple victims and the dirty diaper is gross about it. But unfortunately, the sniffing of the dirty diaper probably isn't illegal. You know, he maybe shouldn't be in the women's restroom, but as soon as he's doing anything sexual. So the fact that they merely escorted him out when he was in the women's restroom doing something filthy. Also, did they not smell him? I'm sorry. Like, that's a gross question, but he had been handling the things. So if your sister's like, this guy was jacking off with dirty diapers, and they're like, what? I don't know. Maybe it's just gross smell. Like, what are you saying? So anyway,
those are two very distinct smells.
Yeah, yeah, no, for sure. And I do think filing police reports right, preserve everything, you know, if you have it all, you know, whatever text messages she sent. And then I would contact just a personal injury civil rights attorney just to do a consult, you know, check the local bar association. Sometimes people meet with you for $20 for a half hour meeting or something like that, just in case they are aware of it. Sometimes personal injury lawyers, and you know, this is an injury to you and that you were assaulted. There are specific personal injury lawyers who do specifically sue sexual abusers that, you know, whether it was like the guy in the last story or something like that. So they're a little bit more aware too of what possible avenues might be available to you. But I think this is egregious.
This is so gross.
It's egregious that they just let him out. They just were like, oh, come on, leave, buddy.
Yeah. And like, I don't know what the bathroom situation there is. And I'm all for like ungendered bathrooms. But if two women are in the bathroom because they got to change their kids, I'm assuming it's a women's restroom. Mm-hmm. And then so as soon as I see a man next to me, I would also be like, oh, this has to be the janitor because why else would you be here?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, kudos to the woman who was like, you better put those fucking diapers down.
Shout out, lady.
And then I don't know. I can't let my mind go to
the physicality of how it works.
Did he use the diaper to do it?
Did he do it in one hand and touch
the
me?
Yeah, like, what? It's so fucking sick, the whole thing.
It's vile.
And it must have happened fast for because he was probably already like all worked up because that's his fetish and his kink and just, you know, making people uncomfortable. And again, another power move with women. Like, I love the look of women's faces when I make them uncomfortable in this. It's like, you know, any type of pervert or serial killer.
Yeah, you're right. And it's that the boundary crossing heightens the excitement of like, I shouldn't be in this room. She's afraid with her kid. She's in a vulnerable position. Like A said, you know, you've got your back turned or whatever. Yeah. So I think your sister-in-law is very lucky to have you because sometimes you do need an outside third party to go, what happened to you is real. Because we all tend to go, oh, well, what, you know, it's just this crazy guy in the bathroom.
He didn't touch me.
This is massively horrific. Yeah. Like, you deserve recompense and to the extent that the St. Louis Zoo has ever once even heard of this guy. And that's why you would go talk to a civil attorney because, you know, there may be comments on their social media page that are like, I can't believe there was a guy sniffing dirty diapers in the bathroom from 6 months ago and they never addressed it and they didn't put his picture up. They didn't ban him from the zoo. So that's when the real liability kicks in. And it's not, well, you know, you might have to get therapy. Like A
said, your sister-in-law should definitely get therapy. I mean, everyone involved.
Certainly, but they shouldn't have to pay for it because it's not their fault. It's either that guy or the zoo's fault. So that's why I would say protect your rights. And I think sometimes suing organizations is a, you know, people think, oh, you're trying to get a payday on one hand. But on the other hand, it's to bring things to the public's attention and to say, we don't stand for stuff like this. And if we've got a pervert beating off in the women's restroom for whatever reason, you kind of have to deal with that in a different way than just like there's an altercation between guests.
Oh, for sure. And you're right. They should have pictures of him in the bathrooms and wherever. Posted on every, you know, animal enclosure that like, if you see this guy, tell someone that works here because he is not allowed to be at the zoo. Yeah. And then we're going to throw him to the tigers.
Yes, the bandicoots are going to – I don't know what's the most vicious animal at the zoo. But
bandicoots?
I think – I just thought – this is a funny word. They're like – they're not that bad. They're like little guys.
Are they animals?
Yeah, bandicoot's an animal. It's like a kind of foxish
That's
looking.
A real animal? That's not a video game animal?
No, it's not. The real animals don't wear sunglasses or jean pants, but they are real, though.
Wait a minute. I got to look up what a bandicoot is. I had no idea. This is like name. When I found out narwhals were real. Yeah, yeah. I thought they were mythical
like
creatures for a long time.
They're marsupials. They're like, you know, kind of, they look a bit like.
Okay, I'm looking at one right now.
Kind of an anteater bunny mouse
rat
kind of mix.
Yeah.
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 Like a big ass rat. Yeah.
Yeah! That one has, I don't know. Oh, they're
yeah, Crash
well, like everything.
He wore
they're native
jeans.
To Australia.
Why do I think Crash Bandicoot's had sunglasses on? He doesn't. He just wears
Are
jeans.
You thinking of the Cheeto guy?
Oh no, he's got he does have sunglasses on in this picture. It's too bright.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Episode 11, he's got.
Well, we've all learned something because I didn't, well, at least I did. I didn't know bandicoots were a real animal.
Bandicoot. Yeah, he's got
I
a
like
sunnies
that.
On.
Oh, you're right. Yeah.
Okay, little sunnies.
To circle back to going
yes.
from something
so don't put him with the bandicoots.
So
they wouldn't get him. The bandicoots couldn't eat him. They're too small.
Yeah, unless you had like 1,000
of
them.
They were
maybe
feral.
That could do it. Ooh, rabbit. That might be worse than one tiger if you had 1,000 bandicoots on you
with rabies. Yeah,
but just one last point because I think this is a really good example. A lot of times we think. Oh, well, what happened to me wasn't sexual assault because I wasn't actually touched. And I've had those same thoughts too. And I remember it was like 8 years ago when I was talking with a psychiatrist and, you know, she's like, were you ever sexually abused as a child? And I was like, no, but there was like this one time where this thing happened and she was like, I can hear that you're really minimizing what happened, and that was not okay. And even like maybe you weren't like physically touched, but all of the things that happened, that's sexual assault. Mm-hmm. And it took me like a long time to really believe that mm-hmm. because I felt like not imposter syndrome, but maybe like, well, I wasn't like raped. So, and I'm like, no, but you were a child and a teenager's genitalia was exposed to you. And he asked you to come give him a blowjob. Like that's assault.
Sexual assault. Yeah. I mean, it's exposing the genitals in a situation that a reasonable person would be offended. And also under 50, you know, you're a kid.
Yeah.
So, but you're right.
Oh,
that,
yeah. I was like 6 or 7.
Yeah. And maybe I'm younger. Glad that the doctor was able to talk with you that way because it was a struggle when I had clients at Legal Aid because all my clients had to be victims of abuse. Like I couldn't work mm-hmm. with them. And so part of my initial conversation with them would be like trying to pull that out. And I couldn't even say, so were you a victim of elder abuse? Every one of them would say no. And then they would go on to describe and go, but it's not a big deal. You know, yes, my nephew, he takes my debit card and takes all the money out of my account and then lies to me about it. And then sometimes if I talk back to him, he screams in my face, but he's just having a bad time. And you have to be like, you just described like 6 things. Like, oh no, but we all do that. And with whatever type of abuse. And you're right. I think it's that, and I don't want to say stolen valor, imposter syndrome, but I think these are all kind of the similar terms where you're like, well, I really want to be compassionate for someone else, but not me. I'm fine. You know, like I'm not a survivor.
Or I don't want to like take the severity of a rape situation and put it on the same level as like what I experienced because, you know, I don't want to like say they're equal. This is all the things I'm thinking as a child or even as adult processing things. But I would say with any kind of assault or abuse, there's a spectrum. Mm-hmm. And no matter where you fall on it, if you fall on it, you have been a victim of something. And don't minimize that because you think it's not, well, it's not that bad. Because it's interesting how our brains work. And something that you think like wasn't really a big deal or maybe didn't affect me, years, decades later could pop up and you're like, oh, shit. Yeah, I'm going to have to work on that, you know,
you're right.
Because it's just been building inside of you. And you're not wrong because maybe you didn't know, but now you know. Like, don't be ashamed because you think what happened to you isn't as bad as what happened to somebody else. Like, it's not a competition.
Yeah, and I think it's good to go to the laws that – and just from the bare minimum perspective, right? Because you want to say like, oh, well, it's not – it's not rape, certainly, but sexual misconduct in the first degree. Yeah. That is, it's a serious enough thing that multiple legislators and multiple people voted on, and they want this to be criminalized. Therefore, mm-hmm. you can't just pull your dick out and jack off in front of people at a St. Louis zoo. You can't do that. You got to go to jail for that, you know, and especially not in front of a kid. You got to go to jail for much longer for that because we as a society are like, we don't do that. So don't feel bad. I think to the hypothetical victim, you know, don't ever feel bad like, oh, I shouldn't be reporting this. It's not a big deal. If it's outlined in a statute, somebody thought it was a big deal. A bunch of lawyers thought it was a big deal. Yeah. So it's it's not a big deal and like it's insurmountable, but it's not something to be just ignored and nothing ever happened. So you and deserve justice. Yeah.
Yes. And as a parent now, I'm like, if Ella came to me and told me like what, and there were other things this neighbor boy did as well. If she came to me and told me the things like that happened to me were happening to her, we'd be at the police station in 5 seconds flat. So if you ever think like, well, it wasn't a big deal, imagine like your kid coming to you with the same story, or your niece or your nephew, or, you know, a child you care about, and put them in that situation. And then be like, okay, well, would you be upset and think this is a big situation now? Of course. Of course you would. So you got to give yourself the same compassion too.
I know. I think of that too, especially because my nieces and I, you know, they're so close to me too. And it'd be like, well, you know, nobody can yell at you. You know, if I tell them that, like if I said, well, someone hurt me, but it's no big deal. I'm like, they would freak out and be like, we got to go to their house. Let's go beat them up. You know, like, so the vice versa, it's like, we all care about each other. So I'm just trying to make sure, like, we all got to make sure that next generation has that give a shit about themselves that we seem to have about them.
Yes.
But together we can do it. Mama will do it.
Mama. Well, thank you, Anonymous, for sharing this, and I hope your sister-in-law and everyone involved and her kiddo, luckily the kiddo probably won't remember that.
Hopefully
your sister-in-law sure will. But yeah, but you know, that kid will grow up and hear this story, and then that will be something that they have to kind of come to terms with. So
consider
therapy for all.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back.
Well, continuing on with all this, this one's from Jay and is called "The Most Horrifying Thing My Child Has Ever Said." Hi there. I've only just started listening within the past few months, but I quickly made it through most of your episodes while at work. While this isn't necessarily your typical Freaky Friday submission, I've heard some form of this topic come up a few times, and every single time I think of this day. This happened when my daughter, who is now 16, was in second grade. She came home from school, walked up the driveway from her bus, and like any other day, I asked her how school was when she got into the house. She replied happily that it was fun because they got to play the block game. My mind immediately went to Jenga, which we had played at home countless times. Jenga? I asked. Do they have the giant version? Not Jenga, she replied simply, dumping the contents of her backpack on the table. The block game, she said. Curious, but still going about what I was doing in the kitchen, I asked her to tell me what the block game was. And what she said chilled me to my core and immediately brought tears to my eyes. It's like hide and seek, except the principal has blocks. They walk around the hallways and hit them together. If we can hear the blocks, we have to push all of our desks in front of the door, hide in the cubbies, and then wait for the blocks to go away. The block game, simulated gunshots, a way to teach young children how to react to an active shooter. My heart sank, and I just stared at her. I didn't think to ask her if they had explained what the sound represented, but based on her description of it being, quote, fun, I hardly believe they did. She started doing her homework like nothing was wrong in the world, and I just continued to stare. She had no idea they were trying to teach them how to stay alive. She had no idea that this game wasn't a game at all. I bought her an Apple Watch a few days later, and she thought she was the coolest kid in second grade, and I ingrained in her head that it needs to be worn every day, not so she is cool, but as a way of assuring she will have a way to call or text us at any time should the worst happen, so I can see where she is, and heartbreakingly, get alerts should there be a sudden medical emergency detected. I know this isn't a very long story, but it's terrifying nonetheless. Long gone are the days of standing outside in lines during a fire drill or holding a book over your head in the hallway for a tornado drill. Now young children play games at school to simulate an active shooter. They play a game because they're not yet old enough to truly grasp the truth of what it implies. As much as this has stuck with me over the years, I can only hope that this is the only time my daughter ever hears blocks while she is at school. Thanks for taking the time to read, and thanks for getting me through countless days at work with your content. Best, Jay.
Oh, Jay. I just thought of this the other day, I was talking to Paris about being in school and old days and stuff, and it never can once cross my mind that a stranger would come in with a gun, that one of my classmates might come in with a gun. I didn't even think about it at all at school. No. Again, Columbine happened right before I started high school, and I was like watching the videos on the internet, by the way, the security footage. Don't do that. But I watched it and being like, damn, it looks like my cafeteria. But I was like, but that'll never happen here. And we never had drills. I never thought about it. And like, what an ignorant bliss that I lived in.
Yeah. I mean, I was in college when Columbine happened, so I certainly didn't think about any of this. They have drills a lot. I mean, they still have fire drills because Simon had one the other day, and I was like, so what'd you have to do? And they do go stand outside and all of that stuff. I vividly remember doing tornado drills. Everyone in the hall, and put your hands over your heads as if that's going to save us.
I know. I was like, okay, I guess my neck, but the rest of me is going to get sucked away like Dorothy.
Everybody was just throwing spaghetti at the wall.
I was like, I've seen Wizard of Oz. I don't think this is going to protect us.
This whole school's going up if something passes by. It is atrocious, though, that this is something that kids are now taught. And like you mentioned, that they don't know really why. And that's maybe the most heartbreaking part is when my kids tell me they have a drill and I know what it's for. And they just think, oh, it's like if somebody just came to school that shouldn't be there, or a quote, bad guy. Yeah, I mean, there will come a time where they learn about stuff. You know what will be interesting? Well, I guess, do they teach all of that in high school? Do they teach like Columbine and school shootings? And I'm sure they do, right?
I mean, I'm trying to think of what that would come under, except for maybe like a U.S. history class.
And yeah,
maybe
history.
Like come up in the maybe like gun regulation discussion, but.
Or things that have changed. So, like we were talking about in the Q&A last night, like what's one of the biggest crimes of the century to change the landscape of stuff? And that was a big one, but also just like, historically, that was the first time something like that had happened. And I've never even thought, like, do they teach that in school? Now I'm wondering if you have a kid that learned about that kind of stuff, let us know. I mean, I'm sure they teach 9/11 and history. All that. It's just like any other thing, but
Things that happened that year.
Yeah. And it's so sad that like they're not told because they can't fully grasp it, but we're still having them do the drills because we're not going to pass the laws that change it. The gun laws. So
no, it is that's gonna be something those kids will, you know, what year do you, it's like you when you realize Santa wasn't real, when you realize the block training wasn't really about blocks, dude. The little bunny, silent little bunnies training, it wasn't about a bad guy, you know, a bandit coming in, but it's been eerie to hear about, you know, a Sandy Hook kid who then was later in shooting at U of Michigan or whatever. So and again, there's been so many, I may be even getting the campuses mixed up, but where you're seeing them re-victimized in the same way over and over again. And then again, like I said, you wonder why Gen Z kids and Gen Alpha kids are fearless kids. I'm like, you raised them at gunpoint.
Yeah.
It does something to you.
Well, thank you, Jay, for sending that in.
Sinister Hood, we'll be right back. Well, Hannah sent this next one in, and the subject line is, spoiler alert, childhood friend's mean dad ended up killing someone. Hi, ladies. I absolutely adore you both and your show. I appreciate your genuine emotions and understanding surrounding serious cases. I also love to giggle along during the less serious moments. Anyway, I'll move on from the compliments into my silly little story. So, when I was a kid, I was super close with my nearby cousins. They lived right down the road from us, and being the 90s with low traffic, I was allowed to walk to their house whenever I wanted. They were renting a home, and the landlord and his family also lived by. They had a child our age, Colleen, so she would end up playing with us often. I wouldn't say we were incredibly close, but our parents all knew each other, and we were invited to her birthday parties and everything like that. I always got bad vibes from her dad. He was angry and mean and would scream a lot. Having a very similar dad, it made me uncomfortable, but being about 10, I didn't really know what to do other than be Colleen's friend. After a few years of this dynamic, the landlord decided to sell, so my cousins moved to another nearby house, and I never heard from Colleen again. Cut to 2017. I'm married and living in a completely different state. One day, I'm on the phone with my parents, having a general catch-up, and my dad says, "You won't believe who got arrested." Then, he told me that Colleen's dad had been arrested for killing his neighbor. I actually was not shocked. It sounded about right from what I knew of him years prior. My dad told me he had a fight with a neighbor and ended up pulling out a handgun and using it on the man. My dad was dumbfounded. "He was a good Christian man. I can't believe he would do that." Good thing we weren't on FaceTime so he couldn't see my eyes roll back in my head. I eventually ended the call and told my partner the story and didn't really think about it too much more. Anyway, a few years later, this story randomly popped in my head, so I decided to Google his name and our town. At this point, he had been through trial and convicted, so there were a lot more details available. Turns out, the details were a bit more chilling than a heat-of-the-moment act. These men were having an ongoing neighbor dispute. The police were called the night of the eventual incident to resolve a dispute where they were screaming and cursing at each other. Later, around 1 a.m., and presumably inebriated, the landlord from my childhood enticed his neighbor out of his home by shining truck headlights into the home. After he came out, they proceeded to start fighting again, which is when the landlord retrieved a semi-automatic handgun from his home and used it on his neighbor, allegedly shooting once and then standing over him to shoot him again. He then claimed the neighbor had a knife and it was self-defense, but it all seemed to be a plot to claim a lesser offense. So, yeah, now that landlord is in jail, and I have a great icebreaker about how a childhood friend's father turned out to be a murderer. Anyway, love you, ladies. I've attached the article for your perusal.
Yeah. Neighbor disputes can go bananas.
It scares me, especially when you can tell that it's like a rage that's inside of somebody that there's no way that you could have a rational conversation.
Yeah. You're like, are my trees hanging over their fence even the littlest bit? Like, did my lawn grow over to theirs? Like, mm-hmm. Walking on eggshells because you live next door to some crazy dude that's just like, anything sets him off, he might shoot you.
Mm-hmm. He's all pissed off. I read the article and it said that, you know, the defense attorney used the phrase, "My client says that he was subject to a knife attack and that's why he shot him." And anytime your attorney's like, "Well, my client has told me he did not do this," versus "my client did not do this," I'm like, that's an attorney who doesn't want to lie.
Because you don't want to get perjured.
No, it definitely seemed like this gentleman had rage issues and it was that's premeditation, right?
Yeah.
You're pissed off.
Luring him out.
And you have enough time to go into your house, retrieve your gun, come back, and then shoot him. That's absolutely premeditated. Even if the fight, you know, it's not like you killed him in a fight because you punched him too many times and you were just like all, it's like you stopped, went to get your gun and came back. So that's
and
horrifying, man.
You shot him twice. If you shot him once and he's on the ground, then you're probably safe. You can go back in your house and call the cops. Well, stand over him, shoot him again. You were shooting to kill, not just to defend yourself.
You were double tapping him. And that's, and sadly, I believe the victim's wife might have been a witness as well, at least to, you know, from a distance to the altercation, which is just so scary that some absolute, just like juiced up, angry, crazy person is just after your husband.
But, yeah. And then you think back to like, what was Colleen going through?
Yeah. Well, and like we said earlier with the zoo guy, like, you know, somebody that does that, they're going to escalate to somebody else. So like this guy, you're like, my whole childhood, he would scream and rage and punch things. And it's like, maybe he'll get less angry with time. It's like, well, not if you don't manage it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's horrible. A horrible end.
Well, thank you for sending that in.
Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. Well, this next one is from my daughter, Anonymous, and the subject line is, I think I stopped a murder by being a crime nerd. Hello, lovely ladies of Sinisterhood. With all the discussion of the poisoning of Eric Richens by his wife, Corey, I was reminded of an event within my own family that happened a few years ago along the same lines. I've written in before, but choosing to stay anonymous this time is I'm around 90% certain one of my cousins also listens to your show, and I need to maintain some plausible deniability. For context, there was a time I was intending to go into criminology, but life took me on a more creative career path. I still read a ton of books, textbooks, follow multiple experts and profilers online, etc. Crime nerds unite. It became something of a joke in my immediate family, and my mother occasionally sends me news articles about missing people or crimes, and I would do my best to profile the crime for her entertainment. 4 out of 5 times I've been right, so not a bad success rate. One day, while visiting my mother, she received a phone call from one of her brothers, Uncle One. I was within earshot of the conversation and couldn't help but overhear the boggling medical questions my mother was asking. She's a retired medical professional, and given the state of the U.S. healthcare system, the family all call her first before consulting someone that costs money. When that call ended, I asked her what was going on. She told me her brother had called her from inside of the doghouse he had been building. It was the only way he could hide the fact he was calling. His legs were apparently visible from his house, but his top half was hidden, so he could call without being seen with his phone in his hand. "What the hell?" I asked, baffled. My mom explained his relationship with his wife. It had been on the rocks after the sudden loss of my cousin years before. The death caused a massive rift between them, and my aunt has been punishing my uncle ever since, in my opinion. She has stolen from his company, emotionally abused him, and made his life hell. A lot of what my aunt was doing was criminal, but he still hoped to save the marriage, so he didn't have her prosecuted, despite the thefts and abuse, even when the family told him he should. I was introduced to a bunch of closet skeletons that day. As Mom gave me more gory details, I felt my spidey senses tingle. "Your uncle's been having some strange abdominal cramping after he eats," my mom explained. "By morning, it's usually over, but sometimes he can't eat or work for days. But it only seems to happen when his wife cooks. He doesn't have issues with food from his favorite taco truck or the church brunches." She went on to describe a few other symptoms, which all sounded worrying and familiar. I told my mother, "I don't want to alarm you, but that sounds like arsenic poisoning." She scoffed at first, but I looked up the symptoms and the effects online, and I showed her the list. I could see her growing increasingly worried, and we discussed the situation. I had the gut feeling that something was horribly wrong, and she agreed. We discussed what could be done at a distance and formulated a plan. My other uncle lives close to Uncle One, is police adjacent, and has had a lot of contacts within local law enforcement. After I explained to my mom that arsenic poisoning would remain in someone's hair long after the poisoning, she called Uncle Two and told him our suspicions and asked if he could talk to Uncle One. Maybe get a bit of his hair for some discreet testing before something horrid happened. We didn't want to make any accusations without proof and couldn't physically be there to sleuth on our own. Uncle Two agreed wholeheartedly this was poison. However, he has all the subtlety of a 4th of July fireworks display. He agreed to the plan, chucked it, and immediately drove out to surprise Uncle Number One. He sat him down for a beer and a chin wag and made sure my aunt was within earshot.
"Our sister tells me you've been having X, Y, and Z symptoms," Uncle Number Two said, or so he told my mother later. "That sounds like arsenic poisoning, and I know you got plenty of rat poison around here. You need to get checked out at a hospital. They can see this stuff, you know. It grows out in your hair, and they can tell how often you ingest it and how much. It doesn't just fall randomly into your food, you know."
I never heard what Uncle One's response was, but I did hear that my aunt left him a few days later, moving several states away as fast as she could go. My uncle was heartbroken, but as Uncle Two pointed out, you are alive to be heartbroken. The abdominal cramping and other symptoms miraculously stopped around the same time. Who knew? Was it attempted murder or just a string of coincidences? We'll probably never know. Uncle One didn't go to the doctor to get any kind of test for the presence of arsenic or other poisons. I, however, remain convinced that he was indeed being poisoned, and it stopped when his now ex-wife realized there were outside forces who knew about his symptoms and expressed suspicion. At the very least, he can now talk to my mother from the comfort of his easy chair and not half hidden in a doghouse. And my mom is happier knowing he's going to be here much longer. Love the pod and all the good work you're doing.
Oh, Anonymous, I agree with you that it was attempted murder.
Yeah, there's a 0% chance that it just happened to abate when she overheard it. Honestly, you know, I think getting a surreptitiously, discreetly, you know, stealing his hair, that would confirm to you that he was being poisoned. But I think Uncle Two's gut of like, I'm just going to basically loudly be like,
yeah,
we know you're trying to poison our brother and we can find out.
Yeah.
And just to save him, you know, you like you said, you're alive to be upset. Like,
and
we're happy you're alive.
When she moves across state lines like, 3 days later, that's
I gotta get out of here.
Yeah, I think you got your answer right there. And it sounds like a lot of these problems stemmed from the loss of a child.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is one of the, it's definitely will make or break a marriage. I don't know the circumstances surrounding it, why she would blame him, but this is like Corey Richens level. Yeah. I mean, if there would be a trial very similar if he had died.
Truly. I mean, that's what Corey was doing, was like trying a little bit more, trying like how much will do it. And then he would get sick and be like, I don't feel good after that sandwich.
Mm-hmm.
You kind of know in your gut, man. But there's something too. And it probably has to do with internal manipulation. I think we all think that domestic violence always looks like potentially a man yelling at a woman. And sometimes it's a woman, maybe not even yelling, but saying things, manipulating, tricking, hiding things. I mean, this man was so terrified he would have to hide himself in a doghouse
that he building, that maybe just for the intention of having somewhere to hide.
Why is that doghouse so big? No reason. Maybe so I can go fucking stay in it because you're horrible.
Yeah.
But yeah. I'm glad that your uncle had siblings that were watching out for him and, you know, let her know, like, people
and
are watching.
You told your mom, like, I think this might be something worse than what we think.
Yeah, we got to get rid of her. Well, thank
four
you,
out of
Anonymous.
Five is a good, you're batting almost 1,000.
Yeah, send us what your books and textbooks and your experts and profilers you follow, because I'm trying to get as good as you. This
right?
is awesome. But that's, you know, using your powers for good.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, my lovely daughter. Sinisterhood, we'll be right back. This final one is from E, and the subject line is DV encounter. Content warning, there's domestic violence discussed. The other night, in the midst of an extremely chaotic week, I got off at the express stop of the subway. It was the wrong stop. I just needed to get off since it had been over an hour for a normal 40-minute ride. A couple blocks into my walk to the gym, I hear what sounds like a man yelling. About halfway down the block, I can see what looks like two people in some sort of altercation. Walking closer, I hear some neighbors interjecting that they would call the cops. A young woman trying to get a young man, assuming partner or boyfriend, off of her, asking him to stop and leave her alone. I don't want to walk in the midst of it, but it would have been too long to turn around, and there was construction on the other side of the street, so I kept walking. I heard him say, "You're just disrespecting me. Now you're embarrassing me." And some other statements that I don't fully remember or care to repeat. The neighbors finally got him to walk away as he lit up what was either a joint or a cigarette. He was using the lighter close to the young woman before he turned and left mumbling to himself. She looked relieved, shook, and frightened. I honestly had no idea what to do or say, but didn't want to leave her standing there. I asked if she wanted me to call someone for her or call a car. She shook her head no. I asked if she lived close. She nodded yes. So I said I could walk with her since I was going that way. We walked together in silence. She kept looking over her shoulder and ignoring what I'm guessing were his calls. I made sure to have 911 dialed so I could easily connect if needed, and I had my personal light/alarm ready. I told her my turn was in two blocks. She nodded and said she was turning at the corner. When I left her and finally got a look, I could see she had a healing black eye. She was near tears. It broke my heart. I wanted to tell her there's help, file a report, that I could walk her to a precinct, but I didn't think it would help in the moment. Instead, I just said, "Good night, and I hope you stay safe." It sat heavy in my head and heart. I wrote what happened to my friend chat, and they all felt the same, sad, disheartened. I wanted to do more. I hope she's okay. I doubt I'll ever run into her. It was a place and a time I would not normally be. This is the second event like this I've witnessed in the last few months. I think I felt I needed to share here because you both are so open and supportive and give resources when needed. This is driving me to volunteer at a DV shelter, and I somehow want a person going through this to know that I can be a safe place to land, even if it's just silently walking or grabbing a tea. It hurts to see this in real time, and I know so many women, and often men as well, experience partner violence, and not all can get away. She just looked so defeated and scared and so young. Thanks for listening and being who you are.
Well, thank you so much for that. And E, I think you did what a lot of us would have done, but a lot of people wouldn't have done too. So there are people that would have just turned around and kept going back. You gave her a safe place. That's very brave to also walk with someone that you just saw a man like screaming at, and clearly he's abusive. You don't know if he's going to come back. To the neighbors, whenever you hear neighbors yelling, "I'm going to call the police," instead yell, "I've called the police.
They're on the way."
I think you did what you could do, and you're doing even more now by volunteering at a DV shelter. I used to work at one, and volunteers are so crucial to those places because it's, you know, run by social workers and people that don't get paid very well. And a lot of the funding is donations, and they're nonprofits, and we rely on volunteers to help in those situations. So good for you for doing what you need to do to show that you are a safe place to land.
Oh, absolutely. And I know law enforcement have told me before that DV calls are some of the highest rates of officer involved shootings and stuff, because so getting in between a domestic violence situation is, I mean, I think you did the right thing of like, you're like, I literally can't walk anywhere else and he's gone. You know, you didn't walk up and say like, I'm going to fight you today, because that's not what we're as bystanders, you know, we can't necessarily do that. But I think you're right, Christy, just saying like to the person, what can I do for you? That's what she wasn't domestic violence, but the girl I stumbled upon who had just been robbed, I was just like, what do you need? Like, because she was just sobbing in the street. And I was like, what happened to you? It was like, this happened. And it's just like, what do you need? Like, and she wanted me to call the police, you know, and she wanted to call her mom. And I was like, okay, here's my phone. So just in those moments, it's like, what do I have to give? And I'll give what I have to give. And from the flip side, if you're listening and you've been that girl in that moment, like, let people help you. Like, people, like, you, I think we don't want to ask for help because you're like, oh, I'm asking somebody to put themselves out there. But when you ask somebody to help, you're giving them the gift of compassionate work to reduce the suffering of someone else. And that is such a gift. Think about the people you've helped and someone saying thank you. You're never like, I'm upset I helped a person. You know, you're like, no. Oh, I feel good about myself. So I don't know. It's much like the, I wasn't abused. You were, but I wasn't. We're like, well, I'll help you, but I don't need help. You know, I'm guilty of this more than anybody. So I've had to really realize like asking for help is actually giving, is a generous act because you are giving someone else an opportunity to rise to an occasion. And I think of it personally often as like, oh, I'm putting someone out, but I'm glad this young woman allowed you to walk with her and let you be, because now it's led to you, you know, volunteering, and you might help so many other people. She has no idea just because she took your help that day.
And sometimes, you know, on the flip side, it's not always safe for DV victims to accept your help right then. However, she knows that there's people out there that care, even if, you know, and that like, so maybe that puts a little bit more bravery into somebody to be able to ask for help. But if you see something, say something, help when you can. If you're in a situation, you know, we'll provide some links in our show notes. There's always, I mean, 911, but there's also crisis hotline specifically for shelters. There's even, I know the shelter that I worked at, on the website for them, there was a thing that was like, click here if you need this removed from your browsing history, or you need to like go incognito, because abusers will check that kind of stuff and it is a real danger. So people that work in that field, are cognizant of that and have ways to even try and keep you safe if you're trying to look stuff up. Because when you do leave, it's the most dangerous time.
Yeah, and it's, what is it? It's like a, usually like seven times you try to leave before you actually are successful and stuff too. So there's that too of like, if you've tried to leave and it hasn't worked or whatever, like it, well, everything is incremental in life. And, it, you know, you might be saving $5 here and there or whatever, you know, any type of little incremental thing. So I hope this story will help somebody, help other people and help somebody accept help if they're in a position to do so. Either way, we don't have bubbles, but my bubbles are that it makes me think of that part of The Office where Michael's fucking around in the warehouse and he like destroys everything and brings it down. And he's like, somebody will clean that up. And Daryl's like, we're the ones that got to clean that up. Cause I know we're always like, Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers. We're the ones that got it. Like, we are the helpers. So like, don't look for anyone. You're a grown up. I'm a grown up. We're all grown ups. So I want to say good on you. Kudos to you, E. You're the helpers. Thank you for being the one that Mr. Rogers told us to look for. We can look for us and we can be those people because people like you exist.
Yeah, it's a scary thing to get involved in something like that, but it's could have meant the world to that girl too. So good on you. And you're, like Heather said, you'll help so many other people by volunteering. It really was a job that shaped a lot of my beliefs and how I approach things now. So you get to, you know, you're going to hear and see a lot of stuff, and it just opens your eyes to what so many people experience. That it's, I'm not, well, one in three girls will experience sexual violence in their life, I believe, and one in four boys or something like that. So, and that's sexual violence. For domestic violence, I think it's also around the same stats, like one in three. So, you know, just speaking out loud, not even like telling someone specifically, I'm a safe place to land in case anything's going on with you, but just being vocal that like in the way you act and speak that people just automatically know that like, oh, if you go to Heather, she's going to have your back because, you know, she doesn't take shit like that. And that's all we can really do.
I think so. And as much as every, you know, thank you everybody for sharing your stories and sending them.
Yeah, for sure.
And horrible things happen in every one of these stories. But in every one of these stories, there was at least one person, you know,
that was helping.
Like, that stood up.
Yeah. Or that said, hey, what you went through was a big deal.
It's
and
real.
You shouldn't minimize it, and validated their feelings, which is huge.
There it is. We're the Mr. Rogers and Bob Rosses that we've all been waiting
for. Unless we find out something.
Unless there were bodies in all of Bob Ross's paintings.
What are those little trees? Yeah.
He's like, there's one body under each of them, but we're the PBS people we've all waited for.
What an insane story is if that came true. And then it's like we all have to go through all these paintings, these like calm, relaxing paintings, and hours of just like, well, another little happy tree goes here.
Like,
and then we're like, okay, so this cabin looks like it may be.
Yeah, hold on. That looks like the Chisos Mountains in West Texas. Okay, so what is that near? Like, we have to triangulate it.
Dude, in this timeline, anything's possible, but please, we can't deal with much more. Please don't take Bob Ross from us.
We gotta hang on to that beautiful 70s fro. Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Man, what a time. What a, maybe that's some bubbles we can end on.
Exactly. Bob Ross. The Bubble Man. Well, unless that's what he called his serial killer nickname, the Bubble Man.
We've been able to finally connect the Bubble Man. It was Bob Ross this whole time. Oh, goddamn. Well, if him or Garth Brooks, one of them, because I think there's also a rumor that he was a serial killer. We know
Chris Gaines,
he's a sexual abuser.
Yeah.
There was a rumor that separate from that, he's a serial killer. But yeah, it's probably Chris Gaines.
Well, again, thank you to everyone for sending in your Freaky Friday stories today. If you have an odd but true story, maybe you've encountered Bigfoot, you've seen a UFO, you had a brush with true crime, or you've felt the presence of an otherworldly being, send them in at sinisterhood.com/Freaky Friday. Speaking of freaky, have you got something creepy caught on camera? Found a weird or unexplainable clip online? Maybe you just have a funny video you want us to see. Send it our way and we'll live react to it during Sunday Scaries, our weekly live stream over on Patreon every Sunday at 8:30 p.m. Central. You just put in your email, you get immediate access. There's no charge. You get a backlog to free content just for signing up as a thank you.
And we'll be back May 3rd for our next Sunday Scaries.
Yes, we're taking a bit of a hiatus due to scheduling We're going to be back on May the 4th be with you,
Eve. That's right.
Well, if you like our free episodes like this one, you'll love our Patreon bonus content. You can join for free to see what we're up to next or dive into over 1,000 hours of bonus content like Judge Christie, where I rule on petty grievances you bring before the court. True Crime Headlines, where we break down the latest news and updates in true crime. Speaking of Corey Richens, we just had a whole True Crime Headlines that discussed updates with her case. We've got Heather Saves, where anything Heather has found late night scrolling could be discussed. And Am I the Asshole, Unpopular Opinions, and other subreddits that we feel require our input.
We also offer free trials, so if you were thinking about checking out either the replay of last night's Q&A or the upcoming live Q&A on April 23rd, you can join in a free trial at our Rule in the Airwaves or Getting Into It tier. For the whole week, you can binge everything, attend stuff, and then if you cancel before the trial is over, you won't get charged. If you stick around, go ahead and do an annual membership, so you get 1 month free. You can join us on April 23rd at 8:30 p.m. Central for the live Q&A, and you get so many other things.
Yeah, ad-free episodes, monthly live stream Q&As, quarterly live bonus content that we live stream. We let you all vote on what you want that to be. Weekly audio bonus content, mini-sodes, merch discounts, and a community of the best listeners on the whole internet.
Head over to sinisterhood.com and click shop on the top banner to check out merch like t-shirts, mugs, totes, stickers, and even clothes for your kiddos.
While you're on our website, you can also review the show. Thank you so much to everyone that's left 5 stars and such nice comments. You can submit topics and cases you'd like us to cover. And you'll also find fun things like topic-based playlist and tickets for Crime Wave at Sea 2027.
Can't wait. You can follow us over on Instagram and Threads at Sinisterhood Pod. Like us on Facebook at Sinisterhood. Follow us over on YouTube and TikTok at Sinisterhood Podcast to watch clips from the episodes, live streams, and more. And if you are looking for a unique and personal gift for the Sinisterhood fan in your life, or maybe you just want to treat yourself to a pep talk, book a cameo now. From happy birthdays to birth announcements to congratulating you on whatever wonderful thing you've done, we would love to create a customized video that can be immediately viewed and sent. It's thoughtful. It's custom. You don't have to leave your house. Use the website, cameo.com/sinisterhood to get the best pricing.
Yes.
Because some app stores be charging you extra.
Oh,
same
yes.
with Patreon. Always just go to the internet like it's the olden days. Mm-hmm. At cameo.com/sinisterhood. Where can people find you online?
I'm on Instagram and Threads at Christy M. Wallace and TikTok at Christy or GTFO. Heather?
I'm everywhere at Heather versus the World.
As always, the devil rules the airwaves.
Keep it creepy.
Sinisterhood.